Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
We're taking a look at Slain. It's 40 years old this weekend. Well, Monday to be precise. And that means, I mean, Slain is a lot older than that.
it's ancient, quite ancient.
But the gigs I'm talking
ancient
about.
East, Ireland's
so,
ancient East.
Do you want to start? So where do we start, Pat?
I mean, well, you've got to start the first one. Just that you played Lizzie there. And good morning, Dave, by the way.
Good afternoon.
And good afternoon, even.
It's 9:30 well,
it's
past
morning,
one.
It's morning for me. The first one with Thin Lizzy, and also you had a very young band called U2 from Dublin.
That's right,
supporting.
Yeah.
And also we had, let's not leave out Sweet Savage and The Bureau and Rose Tattoo and people like that, and Mama's Boys and Hazel O'Connor. So you were doing the introduction. Actually, I saw a picture this morning of the programme from the very first one, and it said words by Dave Fanning and BP Fallon.
That's right. About two nights beforehand, Beep came up to my place and somebody said, why don't you make a programme? Programmes used to be sold at these kind of things.
Why don't you
like
make
a race? Like a race meeting. Or, yeah, the form, exactly. And I'll never forget, like, I was kind of writing proper sentences or whatever, and Beep was brilliant. It was just coming out with the greatest load of fantastic guff.
Boogaloo, all that stuff.
I don't have a copy of it. I obviously never got paid a penny for it, and none of us did. And I don't even know what it looks like. So you've seen a picture of it, have you?
I saw there was a picture of it on Twitter somewhere. Yeah. It must have been the Slain people themselves put it up that it had it. So Philo was on the cover, and it said, someone can text in. It said
vibes
and words, something like that. You know, words, it wasn't just words.
Vibes, beep stuff was. Brilliant.
It wasn't just words, like you were compared to that. But I remember someone telling us the last time, because as I said to you there just off air, the first time I was on your show, we were talking about Slain, which is a couple of years back now. But someone rang in with the story of. What's your man's name? Smiley Bulger.
Yeah,
did an acoustic set.
No. Smiley had a single out at the time called "The Half Mad Irishman."
Yeah,
and that was the big thing he wanted to do, and he did.
He gave them into the crowd, and apparently a lot of people threw them back at him.
That's bound to happen, you know. In fact, I don't know. I just found out today there was about 18,000 there at the first gig.
Yeah. At the very first one, yeah. And I'm sure, and Lord Henry will be on with us later on, that people must have thought he was mad at the time putting that on down there. I think he was quoted somewhere saying he was looking to have a kind of equivalent of the rock and roll, of the All-Ireland for rock and rollers.
Right.
In Ireland, which is what it became, really.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't actually remember an awful lot about that day, but I do remember that whole scene of Philo arriving in a helicopter and steps out, and my God, rock God. He wasn't just a rock star. Mm. It was like, wow. Because, I'd met him. He was on the programme. I'd known him a bunch of times. I've been out in town with him now and again. Mm. And in London. But seriously, he's just like, my, wow. He just looked fantastic. Signed a few autographs for a few
people. So he would have got the helicopter down from Crumlin.
Probably.
Yeah.
Who knows?
You know the story that Bob Geldof told in the book about him, that they were going to an awards show in London and they were staying in a place around the corner, and Bob was getting his gear on and ready to walk off, and Phil said, "Where are you going?" He says, "I'm going to walk around to the place." "We don't walk. Wait for the limo. Wait for the limo."
Ah, yes. Okay, so Thin Lizzy. I mean, have we got rid of the first one? Have we now gone through all the
The only thing we should mention is that, you know, U2 turned up. U2 were doing the Boy album that time. Or maybe it was October, because someone was telling me a story about that there was Illan Pipes on the stage and Bono sang Tomorrow.
Yeah.
With the Illan Pipes, and people going, "Oh, what's going on here?" And then the rest of it, I think that's what they opened with, and then the other three lads came out after.
God, I can't remember.
I'm asking you as an eyewitness.
I can't remember. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
That might be, people can text in.
I remember
and
more about that other gig they did with the Police. Remember that one, the Leak Slipper? Was it in Leak?
Yeah, but wasn't there one? We jump forward 2 years. There wasn't a gig in Slain in 1983. But there was some story about that there was one in the Phoenix Park with Simple Minds and Big Country and U2. But I think that was associated with Slain or something.
Yeah, it was supposed to be the Slain.
Planning permission or something.
And they couldn't get planning permission, so they did it. I mean, it
Eurythmics and people like that.
Yeah, that was a bit of a laugh that day, actually. Mm. I enjoyed that. Yeah, it was good. There was a reggae band on as well. God, I can't remember. Steel Pulse, was it? Yeah. Yes, that's right.
And Perfect Crime, of course. We shouldn't leave them
out. That's right, indeed. Yeah, Gregory Gray and all that, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Rolling Stones was 82. Yeah.
82, yeah. So that was them. I suppose that, because you said that to me before, that kind of put it on the international map, I suppose.
Ah, yeah. I mean, like, it was a step up in terms of, like, how many were there? 70 or 80 at that stage?
I presume it was. I mean, there's a great lineup that day as well, because the Jay Giles Band, you had the Chieftains, George Thorogood and the Destroyers. I mean, that's a great lineup.
Yeah, here, I'll tell you what. Here's going back to the news report television from about 39 years ago.
Radio Television.
Radio Television. Slain, the Stones at Slain. Here goes.
It's the calm before the storm here in the magnificent setting of Slain Castle, as the final touches are put to the stage where the Stones will perform on Saturday. At least 50,000 people are expected to pack the grounds here, making it the biggest event of its kind ever held in this country.
The preparations for an event of this size are enormous. The soundstage is 60 feet high, and on the day will have to be acoustically perfect. The concert is costing £500,000 to stage, with not only the Stones appearing, but also three support bands, including the Chieftains. Today, Mick Jagger, the Stones' lead singer, was at Slane Castle to conduct his own tour of inspection.
As far as I can see, it looks really wonderful. We haven't done, we've done stadiums so far on this tour. We've done before in England, we've done this kind of thing. And usually they're lovely. I prefer them to a stadium. It's hot weather now. We hope it's still going to be warm, or not raining at least. And it's much more relaxing, and it's prettier, than the stadium.
Now, this is your first Irish concert, I think, for 17 years. is it going to be a special occasion for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's special for us. I mean, I love Ireland. I spent a lot of time here in my life. I used to live in Kilcullen for a long while. So it's special to me. We hope we have a good, peaceful crowd and they don't get too out of hand, but they have a good time. I mean, we're going to have a good time.
Right, let's go and exercise this demon once and for all. As Keith once greatest. Said backstage.
He's the greatest. No, yeah. 50,000, if that put that on the map, I mean, I remember... relatives of mine, I was too young to be at it, of course, as you know, but coming back with these colourful T-shirts with the lips on it, and I remember thinking at the time, going, what's going on there? What's that all about? But that was the Still Life tour, I think, where it was Still Life live album. So it was really the start of the show band years for the Stones, if you like. But have you any memories of that one?
Yeah, I do remember the outside track was a 2FM programme, an album show with Pat Kenny from about 5 to 7 every Saturday. So in other words, he was doing his live from down there. And I had to go into the Roadcastle thing and talk about it. And we were getting a bit too deep. I said, for crying out loud, look, that's Keith Richards running up and down that thing like making notes and making not notes. And what do you want? It was fantastic.
There's a story about Lord Henry as well, that Jagger came and stayed. As he said there in that interview, he lived here for a while and he stayed here. But that there was some discotheque in Slane that he brought him. This is before it. And he was sitting there in his white suit and some local fella came over and said, Ginny, do you know something? You are the spitting image of Mick Jagger.
Well, I tell you, we'll ask him because we're going to be talking to Henry in a few minutes' time. Hopefully we'll get him on the phone. So, where do we go? I mean, I noticed that the RTE person didn't say George Thorogood and the Destroyers or Jay Giles. Just
well, he's like me. He probably didn't know how to pronounce Jay Giles properly, Although they're a fine band. That's Peter Wolfe. So he is great friends with Mick and Keith played on his albums. We could go down the trivia route there.
We're just kind of jumping through a few years. That's 82, 83 you didn't have.
83 you had the thing in the park. In 84 you had the one on Sunday, which was Bob Dylan. So there was a bit of ructions at it.
There was, yeah.
There was some story about it, because it was on Sunday, which it never normally is. And then there was, I suppose, bar extensions and Slane and everything, and people were staying around for the night. But apparently they attacked the police station and tried to set it on fire. And all this. Now, maybe if that had happened after Bob Dylan's performance, he could probably understand it a bit more, because we've gone on about Bob Dylan live before. Actually, the new box set that's coming out very soon, that bootleg thing, apparently has more, because there was tracks from Slane on that Real Life album. So more songs, I think, on this box set that's coming out. But that was the day, right? You had UB40, Santana, and Tuonua. And then at the end, you have Van Morrison, Carlos Santana, and Bono and Leslie Dowdall get up for the encore. And that's the one where Bono doesn't know the words to Blowing in the Wind. Hot Press, that venerable, the greatest cultural periodical in the world, sent Bono down to interview Dylan on that. I think that's where they first met, because they'd become great friends in the years in between since then. But any memories of that one?
I mean, 5 years later, was it 5 years later? Yeah, they brought out Rattlin' Home, and there's a song on that called Hawkmoon 269. And does Bob Dylan play the organ on
that? Yeah, he does. And he co-writes Love Rescue Me. Then you could go on about Owen Mercy and Bono telling Dylan, it's in that book, that Chronicles book, he should work with, what's his name, Daniel Lanois, and kind of saved his 80s. Anyway, that's got very little to do with Slane. Have you any memories of Bob Dylan in Slane? Because we always go on about how Bob Dylan is not the greatest.
Do it for Slane either, but it doesn't matter. I always enjoy it.
Well, he had the big band.
That's like saying the movie.
He'd
like
Mick Taylor
movie.
And
great photography.
Mick Taylor and Ian McLagan and everything in the band.
Here, I'm going to give you a few people who were there for certain things, and
that's probably the best thing to
do. This is for Bruce Springsteen the following year, which is 1985, and this is the Saw Doctors, Leo Morin, just on the day itself.
When Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band played Slane in 1985, it was at that point the biggest show that they had ever done. So, for the Saw Doctors, even as a support act on the bill, this was a big deal, a and we wanted to put on a show. In hindsight, though, the idea with the bales of hay wasn't really a good one. We thought that forking hay from the front of the stage during the last song, Hay Rap, would bring some kind of rural theatricality to our finale. Travelling up the country with the crew from Machnus, Pádraig Brannock stopped into some farm in the Midlands and bought a few bales in a hurry from the farmer. When the time came and the twines were cut and the team began to fork the hay up in the air from the lip of the stage, it turned out that it wasn't fresh hay like we'd assumed it would be. It was dry and dusty and at least a year old, if not two. The people in the front rows did not thank us for that. Another stunt was we arrived up the river with Henry Mountcharles in a curragh, brought up from Galway by our friend Henry Higgins for the photo opportunity. We soon found out that six inexperienced boatmen in a light boat on a wide river with a strong current was more of a hairy experience than we'd expected, but we did manage not to capsize. When we finished the gig and were leaving the stage, there were a few Canadian or American lads standing at the side, and one of them spoke to me saying that he'd enjoyed the show. I was delighted that one of Neil Young's road crew would have complimented our gig. And when I got down on the grass behind the stage, someone asked me, "What did Eddie Vedder say to you?" Embarrassing, I know, but in my defence, I was never good with faces.
Sure, all those guys look the same. I wouldn't worry about it there, Leo. Leo Moran it is from the Saw Doctors and his memories of Slane and playing at Slane, of course, as
Come
well.
Come on, Leo.
We are jumping, but we will go back if anybody wants us to. Bruce Springsteen then in June 85.
Bruce Springsteen. So the numbers are the official numbers, I think, are 80,000, but some people reckon there was 100,000 people at that. There's a lot of stories about that. That's the one a lot of people say, well, that was the greatest one. Now, Springsteen at the time, just fresh off Born in the USA, so having hit singles all over the place, 25 million copies or whatever was sold at that stage. But he'd played big gigs in America before, obviously. But that was the biggest gig he'd ever played up to that point. And he was apparently quite nervous. So the night before in the castle, he did the full set. You know, he rehearsed the full set with the band, 3-hour set in front of about five or six people. And I know that for a fact because my uncle was one of those people. He was working as a chef in Slane at the time.
Really?
Yeah. And he was there and he's not with us anymore, but he used to tell me all about that. And he delighted in telling me because, of course, I wasn't there. And so Springsteen came out. And then there's another story later on. It was a great success for him. And they filmed, they were playing the river and they used footage of the boyne from behind the stage. And apparently he took that with him on the rest of the tour and used to play that everywhere. And then years later, his daughter, being an accomplished equestrian, coming over here to do show jumping in the RDS, made a family holiday out of it, got in touch with the people down at Slane and brought the whole family down just to walk around the place because he still considers it a big turning point in his career.
Yeah,
and that's
the
one everybody talks about. And we'll get to this later on. Who would you have next? I mean, it'd be one of my votes to get him back. I know you're a huge fan.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. I can see. Well, anybody would want him to be back there. All right, yeah. Mm. And he did tell us on the programme about how scared he was too, about all that kind of thing. But I want to go for something else because, as I say, moving forward, when you say the biggest crowd, maybe it was 86, Queen.
86, possibly. Yeah. You have, like, that was the one where I think Freddie Mercury stopped the band a few times because there was a lot of, a bit of push and shoving down. It was getting a bit dangerous, maybe, you know.
It was raining, I think. They all emerge into one. I can't remember who else was on that
one. The Bangles, there? Chris Rea, Fountainhead.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The Hits.
The Hits.
I'm not sure. Right. Do you remember them?
No, I remember.
I remember the rest of them.
Obviously, yeah. New Fountainhead and the Bangles. Chris Rea was.
But that was the one. That was after. So that was just after Live Aid, the year after Live Aid, and they must have come in with the helicopter with Queen written. So it must have been massive. Now I've heard people say it was a great gig, and I've heard people say, I've seen them better, and so
yeah,
I don't know.
I saw them there. I saw them at was it the RDS? I saw them somewhere in Dublin. I can't remember. Anyway.
Like I was at the one there where what's left of Queen out in Marley Park there a couple of years ago, and even without Freddie, it was fantastic.
He
so I can't imagine.
Adam Lambert. No.
Oh, he was brilliant.
Yeah,
was as camp now as a row.
I saw a thing in the paper the other day where Adam Lambert bought a house for 32 million.
As camp as a row of tents now, but it was fantastic.
Was Adam Lambert in a Queen tribute band? Is that the point or something?
Wasn't there a TV show?
Was that it?
Or something like that.
Yeah.
There's no more trivia. I mean, the Darkness supported that day, and the Darkness drummer is Roger Taylor's son, and he was.
Wow,
so in his original job.
This is the kind of trivia you need to know.
His original job, he was understudy for his father. So when they were doing Under Pressure that day, Roger Taylor comes out and he's singing, and Rufus Tiger Taylor, who's a now showbiz pal of mine, Dave, went in, took over on drums behind him.
All right.
And that was his job then, and then he got the job in The Darkness. So there's a bit of trivia for you.
There's a bit of trivia. All right, here's one here. It says, I remember 1982, The Rolling Stones, Radio 2, as it was called then. We're broadcasting live from there with Michael McNamara, one of the presenters. Mickey Mack, indeed. That's from Mark in Galway. Yeah, and I was on the other station, was on Radio 1, was Pat Kenny doing the outside track. Okay, we are moving fast, but we'll go back, as I say.
Yeah.
Before I play a break, just going to go to one more. David Bowie in July 87.
Right, that was my first Slane. That was the first time I was at it. I was about 14 or 15. And that uncle I mentioned earlier, I think, got me a ticket to get in. Aladdin Slane, how about that? We use that as a headline.
Hold on. Are you ready for this?
Right, yeah,
you're not the first.
No,
David Bowie, a man in Slane, is a long way from being Aladdin Slane. It's his first time in Ireland. He's changed his image again, but he's still a huge star.
Till the 21st century looks, I know a government man.
I've been pretty much as I am now for, I guess, 10, 11 years. Is that it didn't... I don't think anybody really focused on that until the 1983 tour, but I changed a lot around 1976. I guess something like that. Seriously, so we've really been looking forward to doing this show for this whole week. We've been building up for it. We've had the tour's been fantastic so far, and I know that we're not going to let Ireland down. No, Ireland won't let us down.
No way.
No way.
No way.
No, no, no.
Okay, David Bowie slain.
He says he's not going to let Ireland down. As far as I remember, he kind of did. All right, it wasn't the great. It wasn't. Yeah. No, that was no reflection on Slane.
Do you know
like
who
that
might be the first to admit that? David Bowie himself.
I'd say
the whole
so.
Glass Spider tour.
He said it was a disaster.
He brought it over then to somewhere in Portugal or something and burnt the whole thing. They set fire to it.
But
the problem was there was an awful lot of things happening, and you're looking at the thing going, is that two dancers on stage, or is that a branch of a tree at the far side of the Bowie?
It was a terrible album. It never let me down. It was his worst record. He was promoting.
He did a lot of.
And also the
stuff.
Sun was shining. Yeah. So he had all that Glass Spider stuff was, I presume...
It's for darkness inside
a
theatre.
A theatre, yeah. And so he couldn't see it. He came down from the scaffold on a dentist chair and he was talking on the phone.
Oh,
and you were going, what is going on?
Suddenly
and then he played... towards the end, and this is a very vague memory, I think he played something like Gene Genie, and that was the whole crowd going, here we go, finally, you know, and it was nearly over. Like, there's stories about... Aslan supported that day, young Aslan. And then on the radio there years ago, Christy Dignam said... I don't know if this is true, he said. Bowie was very paranoid about being shot when he's in Slane. And he had all the band... is what Christy Dignam said, so I don't know if there's any truth in this. Yeah. That he had all the band dressed in the same clothes when they were backstage and surround him. So he couldn't pick out David Bowie from a distance. Right? And then the other one is that Lord Henry was sitting in a deck chair with Bowie before, and they got talking, and they were talking about third level education or something. And then Bowie interrupted and said, sorry, Henry, I'd probably better go on. And he just walked on and did the gig.
Oh, yeah. I could believe that, all right. Okay.
But I remember it being a fine day out, but I don't think it... Like, Bowie came back and played later on, and he was quite a bit better, I think, than that
last one he did at the Three Arena.
The one they made the DVD from.
The one that the DVD.
Oh.
That was 10 times better.
Oh, one of the greatest
gigs ever.
That was
the real deal, yeah. Sometimes some things just don't work. And
it's just a bad
production.
Time for him, you know. He was promoting that record that wasn't great.
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't actually great. Okay, we're going to take a break and we're going to keep going. 51552 is our text. At Fanning RT is Twitter. We're just talking 40 years of Slane. It is 40 years since Thin Lizzy, U2 and all that played the very first Slane gig. And we talked to Henry Moyne Charles in a few minutes. Did we get him on the phone? Yeah, why not? Okay, let's take a break first of all.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.
All right, we're talking Slane. 40 years ago, this coming Monday was the very first Slane gig. And let's go to the man himself. Henry, how you doing? Are you all right?
Ah, sure, Dave. I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, actually, well, like, a question like that to you these days. Are you all right? I mean, seriously, this is about Slane more than about you in some ways. But I mean, just tell me, how is the health these days?
Well... thank God, I got to give a plug for the wonderful staff in St. James's Hospital and my wonderful oncologist, Dr. Sinead Cuff, without whom I would not be alive. But I was in total isolation for a year.
Yeah.
I stick very strictly to a routine. I'm managing to walk 2 miles most days. But I've got to be careful. But I'm still here, Dave, and That's the important thing.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very glad to know that you are still here. And just one thing I want to mention too, just now that we're on Slane and in terms of County Meath, the Meath Chronicle this coming Tuesday is going to have a 56-page Slane at 40 magazine, the full honest-to-God story. You might even see a picture of yourself there, who knows. It'll certainly bring back massive memories, and that's this coming Tuesday in the Meath Chronicle. Now, where are you at the moment? Are you in Slane? And if so, what's happening this weekend in terms of celebration or remembering?
Well, at this very moment, speaking to you, I'm speaking from Bow Park House.
Yeah, beside Slane, yeah.
Which is on the estate,
yeah.
And beside Slane. And I've been living here, which is a wonderful place to isolate. But that doesn't mean I was over below the castle last night, having dinner in a wonderful pop-up restaurant down by the banks of the Boyne, called Alta, which we have for a couple of months, which is terrific. My son, Alex, has put together a lively scene in the castle courtyard. So life goes on, and I am plotting and scheming to try and bring a live show in next year.
Hold on, a live show? I would have thought to compensate for the last 2 years, maybe two live shows. You've done it before.
Well, I have indeed. I did it with Bon Jovi and Eminem. I'm going to see what's touring, what's out there. We are very protective of the venue. The act has to be right, have the credibility, and I'm not quite sure. I use a very strange thing pops into my head. I want to see what falls out of the cupboard.
Yeah, well, that's fine. By the way, Pat Carty is here from Hot Press as well, and we're just going through some of the years and some of the days and that. Your name has come up twice already. Once to do with... what's the story you said, Pat?
Hello, Your Eminence. It's very nice to talk to you. How are you doing? did you take Mick Jagger dancing before the Slane? Were you DJing at somewhere in Slane and took him dancing? Is that a true story?
Was I DJing where?
Were you DJing at a small place in Slane, and when Mick Jagger came over? This is before the gig, the gig.
We had a bit of an adventure.
Nice.
Mick, on the first show, Mick and Jerry Hall came down to dinner with a few others. it is true, I did hear someone earlier saying, the incidents in the nightclub with a farmer turning round to Mick. And he actually said, "Jesus, you look the effing split," and Mick Jagger, and took an enormous swig out of a bottle of Blue Nun.
Classy.
I swiftly removed him. And in fact, I was not most popular with management because it was on the Thursday. But I reckoned he had plenty of time to recover. Mick in those days wasn't quite as careful about his regime, so to speak. But that first show was absolutely wild and wonderful. I mean, Jesus, I'm a kid of the 60s. We had half the crew sleeping in the drawing room before the show. And it was the greatest of crack. And I know my children have been out, but to see the little kiddos jumping up and down on their bed singing Satisfaction was something I personally...
And what about Bruce Springsteen? Did he do the full set that we saw? Did he rehearse the whole thing in the castle the day before?
More or less, yes, which was an extraordinary moment. A great privilege. He was such a nice guy. He was pretty overwhelmed, as is recorded in the book that he's written, by the show. I think the exuberance of the Irish crowd slightly overwhelmed him. I regard that 85 show at Slane as one of the greatest, without occasion, I'm often asked which show did I most like.
Hold on, hold on, Henry. Which show did you most like?
The next one.
Yeah. I'm sure you will understand this. The 2001 YouTube shows were terribly emotional for me. Because Iona and I, in particular, had spent a decade restoring the castle. And it was a great target to try and get the castle finished.
Restoring after a huge fire.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. And also, you know, I know the band so well, and Adam is one of my closest mates. And, you know, I will freely admit to crying. I probably cried, actually, on both occasions when they went on stage. Mm. So it was a bit of an emotional...
Do you know, in one way, Henry, it's funny, because, like, people have been coming and texting in, like, you know, we're talking 40 years this weekend since the first Slane. Yes, and they say, OK, well, you were the stage announcer. What are your memories, Dave? I don't remember anything about it.
Well, see, I can tell you that I was in the crowd. I'm not like you, Dave. I paid for my tickets anytime I was in Slane. And some of those memories are a bit hazy, but that might be my own fault.
Henry, what do you remember about the first gig? I mean, how many, 18,000 or 20,000 or something?
It was 18,000 people. Hmm. And it was just, it was very heavy running into the show because I... received some very threatening emails. If you remember the Ireland we lived in then.
Yeah,
was very different.
Not good.
Eamon McCann and myself, you know, had endless discussions about it. But I thought, bloody hell, actually, the more abuse I got, the more it put steel in my back. And I thought, you know, we have to hold our nerve here. And, of course, it was a wonderful day. But it also showed to the wider public, perhaps, and to the wider world, maybe even, that there was a whole new Ireland.
Yeah,
emerging. 100%, yeah.
And it was just something so positive. Mm. And but I do remember, and this sounds absolutely bonkers, I do, outside what is now the distillery, a full Irish breakfast being laid out for the castle crew, including the family, and sitting down. And I only stomached half of it because somehow black pudding didn't seem to be the right thing at the beginning of a show day.
Yeah, probably not.
But... It was magic, and of course, the kids then play in the VIP concert.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of something there now because a memory has come to me all right now about the Stones gig. I'll never forget something. I was we're working. I have to. So I was in the castle, and you were on the phone. The phone rang, and you answered the phone, and. It's one of those classic things where you only hear one side of a conversation. I didn't hear the other side. It was definitely some female cousin of yours in England or something. And you're what? And you were saying, well, no, we have a band playing in the garden today. And she was just going to say, oh, really, who is it? The one goes, oh, that's wonderful. That's marvellous. I suppose you better go. I do remember that bit.
Well, I do remember a conversation with Dennis. Frantic conversation. I think it was at the first show.
As in Dennis Desmond, promoter, yeah.
Yes. I think, was it Sweet Savage? Or no, it must have been Rose Tattoo, an Australian band. And I think their lead singer was called Angry Anderson. Anyway, I got hold of Dennis and I said, what's happening? He said, well, we've lost them. I think they got lost in the airport in some hotel, and that was a whole kind of thing. But if I can just correct one misconception that I heard a clip of someone saying earlier, the 83 show in the Phoenix Park.
Well, that was B.
The real story behind that is that Dennis and Eamon and I made I suppose, in retrospect, a strategic error, because we were very concerned after the Rolling Stone show in 82 that U2 in 83 might not work. In other words, the crowd might look small. But then, of course, we got an electrifying bill with U2, Simple Minds, Big Country, Eurythmics. The whole thing took off. And I underwrote that show, so I was more than a little apprehensive. And so we should have actually maybe done that show at Slain, but instead we found Phoenix Park Racecourse. And yeah. It was a pretty extraordinary gig. I remember leading a charge against a group of punks who broke into the venue.
Leading a charge against a group of punks. Brilliant.
Yeah. I've had a colourful life.
Do you know, okay, finally, Henry, I just want to say one last... Yeah, go on, you're going to say something.
Well, I was just going to say, Lord Henry, I mean, just with the last couple of years that we've had, I mean, we mentioned it earlier, I mean, how far in advance do you start revving up? If and we're not asking you to reveal anything, but if there was a Slain or two Slains next summer, I mean, are you already... Are the wheels already in motion to try and plan that out, to try and get it going at this stage?
Yes, the answer to that is yes. Dennis and I are obviously... in conversation, we are watching because, of course, the live entertainment industry has been completely smashed. But, you know, he is in business in the UK. We're looking at all the restrictions and rules and regulations and how to deal with them. And so I do anticipate by next summer we will have got these sorted out. So, yes, Dennis and I have selected a number of acts in which we are interested.
And what's the criteria for that? When you say select a number of acts, because we've had this discussion myself and Dave before, that do you have to kind of have a legendary, you know, there's a certain status, I suppose. What's your criteria for that?
Well, I think the most important thing, or one of the most important things, is that a good live performer. And secondly, they have to be a sufficient draw for the expenses. In other words, Slain is quite an expensive venue to run.
Sure.
So we've got to be pretty confident that we're going to hit that ticket barrier of break even and hopefully beyond. And finally, that, you know, it's not something that doesn't fit with the venue, and I'm quite confident about that.
And if I whispered the words AC/DC to you, would that mean anything to you or anything like that? If I was to, if
I was just understand to do with electricity.
You got me there. Okay, all right.
Come on yourself, Henry. Thank you very much indeed, Henry. You better look after yourself, right? Come on, you only got one life. Come on.
It's lovely to talk to you, and I hope I will see you at Slain next year.
Well, you put my name down for a couple of tickets, Henry. You will.
Goodbye. Yeah? Come Thanks, Henry. Take it easy. Enjoy the weekend. Come on yourself.
Okay, thank
you very much indeed. Bye. Very good indeed. What was I going to say? This is all looking back and it's all good and all that. But there are certain things about Slain sometimes that, like, it is a one day.
It is.
If you leave Electric Picnic, say, you know, you can, it's all different times and all the rest of it, etc. But when people are
leaving,
stagger the exit.
I've done that a few times. Right. As well.
But like when you leave Slain, you all leave at the same time.
There's going to be
texts. So there's been a few already.
No, there has. I mean,
Slain is hell sometimes. I have not good. If you're home by 7 in the morning, you've done well.
Yeah, the Oasis. When Oasis headlined, there was a problem because there wasn't enough. I mean, I think it was admitted after there wasn't enough buses to cater for my own personal Vietnam story about that is when Guns N' Roses played in 92, I think it was.
There was a 5-year gap.
I met a fellow who said his car was down the road. I was going home. I was trying to get back to Maynooth, where I was living at the time, and then we ended up having to walk for about 10 miles. Then he left us off in Kinnegad. Then I had to beg some fellow with a bus to give us a lift. Nearly got assaulted by a load of golfers on that bus. Got back to Maynooth. I don't know. That's just my own personal story, but that's all part of the experience,
see,
Davis.
No, it's not necessarily at all. also. Okay, we have
now, you told me one time you got a lift back with Robbie Williams was playing, right? And you made a big deal about telling me the story. Oh, I got back and I was in Dublin at 11:45 because I got in the car with Keith Duffy out of Boyzone and all that. You know, but it's different for you.
No.
For normal people like me, it's a different experience.
No, I'll tell you, getting out of Slane can be frightening.
When you're carried out of there on your throne by several...
I'm going to play something else now entirely different, which is... I can't even remember which year. Which year did Relish play again?
Oh my God, I'd have to go through here. Who did they support?
Kenny Papenfuss. I'm going to give you a little bit of him now. So here goes.
Hi, Kenny from Relish here. One part of the duo of Kenny and Carl from Relish. Yes, you two were the headline act when we played at Slain. We were doing quite well in Ireland at the time. We had a couple of hits out and we were now in the UK touring extensively. We'd moved to London. Now, it was on the kind invitation of Larry Mullen that we got the opportunity to do it. And for that, we are forever grateful to both Larry and you two collectively for the opportunity. And we just did our thing. We played for half an hour. Maybe it was 30, 40. You know, our manager at the time, very excitable chap, said that we played to 50,000 people, but I think it was maybe slightly less than that. But it was a great vibe, absolutely amazing. And Bono had just buried his dad, and there was electricity in the air is a massive understatement. And what a performance. And unfortunately, I had to leave in the middle of my favourite U2 song, Bullet the Blue Sky, which just sounded incredible. Got the car home with a friend of ours. And arrived at my house early hours of the morning, still in my leather pants and a sweaty t-shirt, to be greeted by a friend on his way back from the pub or some party. Said to me, "Hey Ken, man, still not wee band of yours?" Yeah, still playing away. Getting many gigs? Yeah, doing a wee bit. Yeah, good man yourself. So where are you playing tonight, like? Or you just wear them often? I was playing tonight. Where were you playing, big lad? I was playing down at Slane with U2. At which point he chuckled and walked on. The following night we played in the Half Moon Club to possibly 40 people. We come on to the second set and half the people have left. And I did say, look, you know, last night we played to over 30,000 people at Slane Castle. But look, we appreciate for everyone that stayed on. We appreciate all their efforts to try and make this a good night, at which point everybody thought, that guy's really funny. And some great memories. Thanks very much.
Good man yourself, Kenny. Thank you very much. You played. They supported you too, and that was back in 2001, and that's Relish is the band. Back with more after this.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
All right, we're looking at Slane, as in the gigs, 40 years old this coming Monday, to be precise, when Thin Lizzy, U2, etc. played, and we're just going through some bits and pieces here with Pat Carty from Hot Press, and yourselves, 51552, at Fanning RT is the Twitter address. Hi, Dave. Great memories of Neil Young playing Slane with Pearl Jam in the 90s. Just heard Liam Moran on your show with some funny stories. That Slane gig was my first time hearing the Saw Doctors. I couldn't believe all the crowd singing the N17 chorus. Hope there's going to be a Slane gig next year. That's David Hardy.
There's a story about that. I know people will confirm this. I wasn't at that one, but that a lot of people left after Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people
that
were there.
That happens all the time.
Were there to say, oh, yeah, but I mean, yeah. It was a considerable. Well, this is what I've heard that year, that a lot of people...
Yeah,
listen,
Neil Young can be hot and cold in that. He was all right.
But the kids who were there for Pearl Jam... Not the kids, that would have been my age.
That's
but
true, yeah, in so many ways. Now, the fact of the 20-plus
And you get
gigs,
your bus home.
How many gigs are there? Were there?
Oh, Janie. Give us a few minutes on
the count. There's only three I didn't see, which is the second Guns N' Roses. I didn't see the second Stones either, and I certainly wouldn't be going.
I was at the second Stones one.
Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just take a look, because Guns N' Roses, you mentioned, that's 1992, the first time I saw that, which was huge. Then Neil Young. Who was on with Neil Young?
Neil Young, Pearl Jam, Van Morrison, Saw Doctors, James, Blue Angels, that's Shane O'Neill's crowd, Four Non-Blondes.
Oh, right.
And then there was a year, there was a gap, there was nothing in 94. No, there was that the year that the Celtic Woman was recorded? Might have been. Don't that's know. A whole different story. Mm. 1995 then was R.E.M.
R.E.M.
and Oasis.
Right, yeah.
Now, I was at that.
Yes. Yeah,
I had an awful lot of wine inside me at the time, so I'm not a very reliable witness. But from what I remember, Oasis kind of wiped R.E.M.'s eye that day. They were in between the first and second album, and they put on a very, very powerful performance, I'm right. Nothing wrong with R.E.M. I'm a fan of them, not as much a fan of maybe as other people, but they're a fine live band. But I just think they were outgunned that day.
Right, outgunned that
now,
day.
Now, let's see, people will, the phones will light up, as they say, in all the best radio shows.
Okay, I'll tell you, somebody else was on the bill that day is this guy here, Luca Bloom.
Oh, yeah. This is Luca Bloom here. Wow, Slane Castle, 1995. Unbelievably beautiful lineup of people, bands. What a privilege. I'm still so grateful to Dennis Desmond for giving me that particular gig, because it was an amazing day in an incredible venue, glorious day. I loved everything I heard. I stuck around for everybody. It was such a joy. Everybody was brilliant. The audience was unbelievable. REM, just spectacular. Oasis, my God. Oasis-like, hello? Everybody was great, but you know what? What really got to me was Spearhead. Because when I was on stage, my 11-year-old son, Robbie, my then 11-year-old son, Robbie, was making friends with Michael Franti and Spearhead backstage. And when I came off stage, went into my dressing room, lathered in sweat, and in comes my son into the dressing room with these tall, amazing people from San Francisco. And we just became friends. And it was beautiful. And we hung out together for the whole festival. I made a show of myself because Michael insisted on pulling me on stage, and I had no clue what to do during his set. It was a hilarious moment. The whole thing was just magical. Until we heard that two young lads lost their lives trying to cross the river. It was such a perfect day and such a horrible tragedy. Life is so random and so strange. And that day, we got all of that in the one day. Both amazingly beautiful memories and utter heartbreak.
Pretty powerful stuff. That's Luca Bloom talking about the day he was there playing there. Also on the bill was Belly and Sharon Shannon, and as he says, Spearhead and Oasis. And you were saying somebody threw a rock.
Yeah, I think someone threw a rock at Oasis during one of them. Now, to be honest with you, I had so much wine. If someone told me it was me, I could have been that Judas guy in that Oasis crowd. I can't remember. But someone threw a rock at him. And you know yourself, it could have all kicked off there. But it didn't.
Here's one here that says, my father was on security duty in Slane in 1986 at the castle. When Chris Rea arrived at the door, he asked him for a ticket. Chris replied he didn't have one, so Dad said he couldn't come in. So you should have seen the shock on his face. So, very good. 5-1, 5-5-2.
Could have saved us a lot of trouble that day.
Slane itself, Pat.
Yeah, I think it's of all the venues in the country, it's the iconic one, isn't it? I mean, it's the one that, first of all, an awful lot of these bands release DVDs and release recordings of these shows because it just looks so fantastic. And just what Lord Henry was talking about there, after they'd rebuilt it or fixed it up after the fire, and that U2 one in 2001, both of them, and there's a DVD of that people have seen. Like, I can remember looking at that, and they had the heart-shaped stage, and the castle's over to the, as you're looking at the stage, the castle's over to the right-hand side, the bar's over to the left, but it's as if the place was designed. And when you walk in at the back, now I haven't been in a few years, I presume people still do that, and you're just looking down at it. Like, you know, there's a lot of great venues in the country, and you know, you go to Crow Park, whatever, but there's something very, very rock and roll and iconic about that. And, you know, you could talk about it as everybody, I'm sure, is listening who's been at least once, you know, it's a kind of just a great memory. You know, I was talking to my kids about it. I don't remember years. I remember who was playing that year. What year was that? I don't know. Was that the year you two were in Slane, kind of a way. But it's just a fantastic place to go. I mean, of course it matters who the band are, but, you know, it's a great experience, even if, because I've been at some ones that maybe weren't so great, but, you know, still had a good old day out.
Yeah, the one that I would have thought like was really a bit of a whatever, not great at all, was the Eminem one. I wouldn't be the majorest fan in the world one way. But I mean, like, he had so much backing stuff going on that, like, I'd say he had the whole thing on a mini disc.
Well, he cancelled that.
He cancelled in 2005.
When he came back,
people just wanted to go and see Eminem. It's fine, but seriously, and any hit he had, he did about 5 seconds of it, and then it was all a bit.
It was
of a
two.
Mess.
I mean, that was the year there was two that year because Bon Jovi as well.
Vocal track, and getting out of Slane that night, it was just insane.
Well, let's talk about, I mean, you're talking about Slane, you're talking about, like, there was a year there that Stereophonics and Ocean Colour Scene.
Macy Gray, I remember they had about 5 B Division types.
Second Division teams lining up for the Cup Final. We'll gloss over that.
But I mean, like, the set that he played, whatever year it was, Eminem.
Right.
What year was that?
That was
2017, maybe? I don't know.
Don't know.
Anyway, it was the exact same thing that he did at Oxen the year before. It was the same tape. He just put it, sticks it in.
So you're thinking you just put in the tape and press play. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, well, that's kind of exactly what I'm saying.
There's an argument here about that.
Yeah, who cares about playing the instruments? No. That,
it was 80,000 people who bought tickets on that. So, like, you didn't like it. Who cares? Yeah, you know, they liked it.
Okay, fair enough. And there was somebody else on too. Plan B was on before. Look at this whole thing. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen. Anyway, Dave went to see Richard Ashcroft.
Well, Nickelback played 1 year. Don't forget that. You know, so, and Counting Crows. Like, look at this. Hold on for this lineup here. Nickelback, Counting Crows, and Ocean Colour Scene. I mean, Janie Mac. I'd be washing what's left of me here that day.
Okay, fair enough. Went to see Richard Ashcroft at Malahide Castle in 2018, and it brought me back 20 years to when we saw The Verve in Slane, supported by the Mannix. What a day and what a gig. That's Jay and Black Rock. Now, I'll tell you what I'll do. We'll be getting to the Mannix on sale.
But the big story that day is
The Verve. Hold on, before you even give us another one, I'm going to stay with 1995 Slane, REM, because you've got to get these TV reports.
Oh, yeah.
It's the original form of the Summer Rock Festival in Ireland. In 15 years, Slane Castle has played host to almost a million people. And this is the American group that's going to do it all over again this weekend. Serious illness hit not one, but two members of REM this year. And at one stage, it looked like the event would not take place.
I must say, their ill health hasn't done my constitution much good. Yes, there were some very anxious moments over the last month or so. But Slane goes ahead, which we're delighted by, and it is fortuitous in a sense that because they did cancel six shows, that Slane goes ahead.
Not as legendary, say, as the Rolling Stones, or not as legendary, say, as Bob Dylan, but in terms of the now and what's happening, in terms of a build-up of over 10 or 11 years of a band that have total credibility at its base, which is the important thing, it's as significant as all the other ones, most definitely.
Gosh, that's so succinct.
You've been getting away with it for a long, long time.
Let's take a break and have the news and talk more Slane after this.
Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.
Pat Carty is the voice you're hearing. He's from Hot Press. We're looking at Slane. Still a few more to go because we've only got through whatever we went through. Mm. So where are we going next, Pat?
The story about The Verve. I mean, I heard different reports about that. Manic Street Preachers played that day as well. But the kind of success story from that was Robbie Williams was third on the bill. Yeah. And he did a version of... it was Tom Dunn, I think, told me that. He did a version of... There She Goes by the Lads, and he put on a great performance. I don't know if you remember any of that. And then 1 year later, I mean, that was the time that he was he went supernova anyway. He was everywhere.
And it was like brilliant weather. And just to get back to weather for the moment, like, I mean, I've seen you down at there's been two altogether nights down at Port Law in Waterford. And the first one was the sunniest day of the decade.
We were in the south of France that day.
The next one was the wettest thingy about.
Yeah, now I want to tell the story that happened at that. We were down at that and we were roving around the place at the first altogether now, having a great time, being all showbiz, talking to the people.
I was
trying
to avoid you.
Yeah. And then the next one, you were there and you had your yellow poncho on, but that's you right. left me at that. You went off.
You
said,
working,
right, I'm going.
It was lashing.
I was working.
And
I was
people
working,
all go on about, like, it doesn't matter if it rains, these things. No, it
does take away from it. And Slane, seeing as we're talking about Slane, I mean, the famous one at Slane, I mean, the second Guns N' Roses
the
was very
damp. The second Stones was Slane.
I don't remember that being that bad. But it was the Madonna one is the famous one. Absolutely.
When I arrived, I thought I was going to be late because I only went down to see Madonna with Aldridge, but I came down a bit late. So I got down to the thing and rush into the thing. I thought she'd be on like by 8 o'clock. Not that I Foo Fighters was torrential. This text here, that's right. I was at that. I can't remember. Anyway, with Madonna, I do remember. She was an hour late going on, so I was in plenty of time. And they had the biggest brushes I've ever seen. And they were just brushing this torrent of the Slane, of the
there's
river.
There's a documentary from that tour where she's on. A clip of her praying backstage, saying, asking God to please take the rain away for... and if you think if Madonna can't get a direct line to God, then who can? But, you know, because she's named after his ma, for a start. But she couldn't... she was trying to get to 2 hours away from that. And then the other strange thing of that, because I remember someone telling me about, is Iggy and the Stooges. Iggy Pop and the Stooges now.
Bit of a strange lineup.
We're supporting. And then, so Iggy is out with the shirt off, swearing, effing and blinding, and all these Madonna kids are down the front going, what?
With the Cabalas.
Why is this... is that Madonna's granddad? What's going on here? What's that all about? But the rain at that, I remember you telling me when you were driving down that it just was really, really dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a dark
just before
night,
you even got
which
there.
Which is not a bad thing because often Slane, the headliner, will start at a certain time to the point where at least the first hour or more is in brightness, and you don't want that.
No.
You want
you don't.
The darkness because you want them to use the lights that you're paying for. Whatever,
exactly.
Anyway, so that's The Verve. Okay, I'm going to give you something else. When did The Walls play?
The Walls were one of the supports for you too, if I remember right.
I'm going to give you a little bit of that then. Here's The Walls. Are you ready?
The Walls were confirmed for the second Slane show that U2 performed. It took place on the 1st of September 2001, And when we heard there was talk of a second Slane gig for the band, we managed to send them copies of our debut album, High Low, and through a mutual friend of us and the band called Reggie. And we put a package together, which included a CD for each of the band members and packets of Tato's, some Lion's tea bags. And there was we wrote a letter as well, just giving some advice to the band about being on the road, to be careful of their backs when loading and unloading equipment in and out of the van, all this kind of stuff. It was a kind of a funny letter. And much to our surprise, we got a call back from U2's people, basically saying that the lads loved the album, and they were requesting our presence at on the second concert, and were we available on the 1st of September? Of course we were available. So the gig was great. We were really well treated backstage, and the catering was absolutely gorgeous. I met Bono for the first time, and he told me that the Walls were the wild card. I remember that's how he described us. Bit of a gamble, sounds like. But we played a great set, went down really well, gained lots of new fans from U2 fans from various parts of the world that follow the band all over. During the day, they showed the Ireland match against Holland. It was a World Cup qualification game, and Ireland won. It was the famous Jason McAteer goal. And later that night, we went to Lily's Bordello. We went to that. We ended up in the VIP lounge on the top floor, and who happened to be there but the Irish team, all of them. There was a full on sing song happening with Paul Harrington on piano, and the conductor was Eamon Dunphy. And we got to hear Roy Keane singing Blowing in the Wind, Bob Dylan's Blowing in the Wind, and Niall Quinn singing Boule of Vogue. And all kinds of crazy stuff went on, which I would never divulge, because what happened in Lily's stayed in Lily's. It was a fantastic day for the Walls, and a great night, and a really memorable U2 show.
Wow, Steve Wall, yeah. Good man yourself.
I presume you were in the corner of that sing-song, conducting things, right? Which you can't remember.
No, I can't remember. What was I going to say? The Walls. Yeah, I do remember. Here's one here, actually. Mm. I remember the goal. I mean, there was more people, shouting about the goal at Slane than there were at the actual gig in Dublin, where it actually happened. And there's one here that says, I was at the U2 gig that took place on the same day as Ireland versus Holland. Great day. Mm. One of my abiding memories is supporting act Moby. I remember bringing Ardlo Hanlon on stage to sing My Lovely Horse, but it seems so bizarre that sometimes I think I imagined it and put it down to what was consumed that day, says Gavin.
I've heard that story. I don't remember that. I was at that, of course. I would have been at the bar for a lot of Moby, I think.
I do a lot of...
A lot of what? Work for charity.
You just wander around a lot. By the way, I meant to mention to Henry Man-Charles there that... I was at one of the gigs, I don't know which it was, and do you know who I met there and was talking to him? And Pete Townsend, he was there.
Wow.
Yeah, but The Who never played there.
No.
Just guesting, obviously, maybe checking the place out.
Maybe it's probably the U2 one or something like that.
No idea.
That Jason McAteer thing, I mean, that was, what I remember from that,
that was
is
amazing.
Do you remember the hammers, that blow-up hammers? With the tricolour on them. And they were all waving in the air, and it's just and Bono came out later on and put the tricolour around his shoulders and says, imagine it's Jason McAteer. To be honest with you, U2 are fantastic, and that was one of the greatest gigs I was ever at, but all they had to do there was walk out and not bang their knee off the drum riser.
Ireland
winning
1-0 on that thing, there were more people there than there were at the actual gig.
It was great.
Here's two texts here. Eminem Slane 2013, I took my son for his 16th birthday, absolutely brilliant gig. And here's another one. Hi Dave, I've been to Slane several times. Eminem put on the worst performance I have ever seen. Yeah. Brutal. Still giving out about him to this day. I
must say,
I was giving out about him earlier on. Maybe I should just go the whole way. Yeah, it was absolutely brutal. I thought of the whole thing, but it was terrible.
Well, there's only been three. I mean, Bon Jovi that year. That looks like a bit of a. With the greatest respect, to everyone.
That's one of the three I didn't go.
That
to.
Was kind of. That looks like a kind of a white loaf of bread kind
I'm
of gig.
Not really going to Bon Jovi. Go on.
There was three since there, right? So you had Foo Fighters made the step up from Foo Fighters. First of all, had to cancel. They were supposed to be one of the sports for U2, and the drummer had a bit of a medical problem and couldn't do it. And so they supported. Who did they support? Janie, I have it written down here somewhere. Anyway, people can ring in and tell us who they supported. They were on the Queens of the Stone Age. I can't remember whose gig that was. Doesn't matter. Anyway, they came back and did it themselves in 2015. So you had Ash and the Stripes on the bill that day. Foo Fighters playing Jailbreak because of where they were. Dave Grohl said he considered it like a badge of honour that they finally got the headline Slane. And then since then, you had the return of Guns N' Roses. So Guns N' Roses came along and played on time that time. We weren't waiting for 2 hours to come back. I remember there was torrential rain that time. I asked to cover that gig at the time and I was too junior to be sent to it. And I was kind of glad when I
woke up. Cover as in review it.
As in review it, yeah. And but it was lashing rain. But Edwin McPhee, who's much better than I am, was at it. Was at it. And then the last one then, so far, was Metallica in 2019.
Okay, before we get to all that, you mentioned Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, the tour was called the Because We Can.
Yeah, I have
tour.
That written down here, yeah. Because they should have changed it to We Wish You Wouldn't.
Well, no, that's fine. There'll be a lot of people texting in 5 months.
Yeah, I know.
You? Here's we are going to get to Metallica. I went to see Metallica at Slane 2 years ago, brilliant concert. The stage looked great as well. You could see flames coming out of it at some points. That's from Bernard and Galway. I don't think it was on fire, though. Hold on a second.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, that's who Foo Fighters supported. Sorry, I've just found a piece of paper, 2003.
I'm going to give you one here because...
do you want to hear my Red Hot Chili Peppers impression? Because they're terrible.
Yeah, go on, what?
Bank, 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 going to California, bank. That's all their songs there in one go. There you go.
No, I'll tell you, there's a story about, what do you call it, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I bet it's a boring story.
No, I'll tell you what it is. Chad, the drummer, they just played a great gig and they got onto their plane afterwards somewhere or other. And he got on the plane really kind of fired up. And there was a lot of magazines. And this is true. And he picks up the magazine and there's a picture. There's an interview with Nick Cave. And he goes,
I know this
one. Nick Cave. Like he's my hero, says Chad. You know, Nick Cave just says, there's an awful lot of crap on the radio at the moment, and it seems to be all from this crowd called Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Bonka, 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 take off your clothes. Yeah, it's all the same thing. Yeah,
2 weeks he was in depression. Here, hold on a second.
The Metallica one is when they rehearsed in the Olympia. They hired out the Olympia Theatre in town and rehearsed in that for a couple of days.
I vaguely remember something about that. Here, look, I'll tell you, this is on the gig of what do you call it, Bon Jovi, on the 15th of June 2013. It was the Coronas, Brezzy, and Ham Sandwich. So let's have Niamh Farrell from Ham Sandwich.
Ham Sandwich played Slane in 2013. It was the year Bon Jovi headlined. Brezzy and the Coronas also played as well. It was a huge deal for us to be asked to play Slane. I mean, we were going to be the first band from Meath to ever grace the stage at Slane, which was a huge deal for us. We were so proud and so excited. The day itself was incredible. I mean, we all got to bring family members. I got to bring my dad and he got to take photos of us during the gig and stuff. And my dad had been at Slane to see Thin Lizzy, you know, so individually, you know, and in terms of our families and stuff, like, it was a really, really huge deal. And we were all just very proud to be there that day. This set, we had 20 to 25 minutes to wow the crowd. So we were rushed on stage. We had a small bit of stage at the front, you know, because Bon Jovi's setup was quite large. There was a big half of a car on the stage and stuff. So we went on and we just played our hearts out. We had our comedian friend Fred Cook as well. He said to Podge or Darcy a good few years ago that if we ever played Slane, that he wanted to be on stage and he would play the triangle or the tambourine or anything. So we got him on stage and he played, I think he actually played keyboards or xylophone. But to do something like that for your friend, you know, as well, was great. During our set, there was a small group of tourists being shown around the stage, which was around the left-hand side of the stage while we were playing, which was pretty hilarious. After the gig, I mean, we were just, you know, in such high spirits. Everybody had an absolutely great evening. I had to run off and I had to get on a flight to my mum's 50th birthday in Scotland. So I missed most of the crack later on in the night. And I also missed Bon Jovi, which was a shame. But it was an amazing day, and a day that I will definitely never forget.
She'll never forget it, indeed. Well said. Niamh Farrell it is. That's from Ham Sandwich. Yeah. And they played, as I say, in 2013 with the Coronas and Brezzy, and Bon Jovi were headliners for that one. So, where are you going now? Have we done Metallica? Is that the next one?
Metallica was the last one. So, first of all, two. 2017 was the return of Guns N' Roses, and that was with Other Kin, and then 2019 then, which was the last one so far, was Metallica.
Actually, before you go in any further at all, here's Luke Riley from Other Kin talking about it.
My name is Luke. I was in a band called Other Kin and we played Slane concert in 2017. It was probably one of the most memorable experiences of my life. You'd be surprised to hear. it was... given, I guess, extra relevance by the fact that I'm actually from Slane. So I grew up literally down the road. And my earliest musical experiences were going to Slane concert with my parents pretty much year in, year out. So to be given the opportunity to play a concert, you know, at the spot that I grew up around the corner from was just unimaginable. It was really a special day. We were talking to our manager afterwards and they reckon by the time we played, and we were first on, obviously, there was about 5,000 people there. So it wasn't bad, you know.
Yeah.
But just, it was just unlike anything else. It really was. And I remember the rain was coming down in torrents. And we had to cover all these pedals I have here. We had to cover them with kind of tarps and stuff so they wouldn't electrocute us. And when we came out, the sun actually came out. And it was great. It was really just, it's just unlike anything else. We nearly got into a bit of a scrape because a mate of ours is filming it, and he, you know, the Axl Rose doesn't like that. So we nearly got a bit of an accosting by Axl Rose's security guy, Gio. He's like, what are you doing with that camera? And we had to, you know, be very contrite. But nothing could really spoil that day. We had a big after party in the, you know, there's a nightclub in the basement of the castle. So there was a DJ there and it went into the wee hours. And yeah, I just can't forget it.
Go on yourself, Luke. Mm. Well said. That's Luke Riley. Otherkin was the band. He's got a solo album thing coming out.
Did you know that Axl Rose is an anagram of Bellend? Did you know that?
I knew it all. And those people say, no, there couldn't
Don't
be
look me in the eyes.
Because there's eight letters. No, there aren't. It's AXL. Not AXL. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so where are we going next?
Well, the only one we have left then is Metallica. And then to talk about, I mean, Metallica, as I said, they hired the Olympia here in Tenor Rehearse. And from all reports, that was just a phenomenal gig. And they've actually displayed that on their website as well. So all these bands record these things because of the setting. But the question we have to ask, Dave, is when the world comes back next year, as we hope it does, who are the candidates? Who?
Well, from your point of view, it's obviously Bruce Springsteen or AC/DC.
Well, I mean, that you see, you like you had two.
AC/DC would be celebrating 50 years on the road.
Ah, well, AC/DC, I'd go see AC/DC anywhere, but I mean, and Bruce Springsteen just to come back, I mean, but is there anybody else? Apart from you two, I suppose, are an obvious name as well if they were out on the road. But who else would you nominate for that? Would Radiohead fill it?
Yeah, of course they would. Yeah, of course. Especially if it's any way as good as the gig I saw in Three Arena Pod about 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
That was that all the beeps and beep, beep, beep,
yeah,
beep.
Fantastic.
Jesus.
Fantastic.
Don't be annoying me.
Okay, so is there anything else to say to you? No?
It is a fantastic thing. You can use the old cliche, rite of passage and all that, but it really is a fantastic gig. You were giving out about getting home. Sure, so what? You got home eventually. Sure, what's the hurry? You'll be there for mass the next morning. You'll be all right, you know? It is a great gig. I mean, if they announced, it doesn't matter who they announced, you'd seriously consider buying tickets anyway, because it is just a fantastic day out. Now, if it's raining, yeah, it's raining. Sure, so, you know, bring a jacket.
Yeah, okay. On that note, thank you very much, Pat Garrity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dave Fanning.
And it's time to get out of here. Sorry, it's not time to get out of here.
It's time for me to get out of here.
To stop the Slane stuff. And congratulations, Slane. Congratulations, Henry, and everybody else involved in terms of just the weekend they have there as well. And enjoy it. Monday is the actual 40 days. Of Slane.
40 days, 40 years, that is more like it.
Did I say 40 days?
40 days and 40 nights of Slane.
Something like that, yeah. Goodbye.
Good luck.
Back in a minute.
Dave Fanning. Weekends on 2FM. 2!